himself with a lap full of Laura. "So, are you here to make a deal?" Maura asked. "You know my price." "What makes you think that?" he asked, sure that his thoughts were protected from her. "Your emotions are dark, super serious. And if you're coming to me feeling like that, I doubt it's for fun." A grin crossed her face.
"Maybe it is," Laura suggested. "I'd want to fuck us if things were too serious."
"Laura, shut up," her sister said.
"No."
Nathan allowed himself to bask in their simplicity. Like with Kadria, he had grown accustomed to them. He knew that was a bad thing, but it allowed him to justify what he was about to do. A thought occurred to him. "Before I get down to business, I have a question," he said.
"Shoot. Preferably literally."
Maura reached over and ran a hand along his thigh, and her grin turned lewd. "Not that sort of question," he said. "What part of the burger gives it the name? The ground meat patty? Or putting something between two buns?" Maura stared at him, and stared, and stared. Nathan wondered if he had broken her.
"Doesn't it depend on where you are?" Laura answered seriously.
"The fuck kind of answer is that?" Maura growled.
"I mean, they called all sorts of things burgers elsewhere, and Kadria laughs at the stuff we call sushi."
"No. Fuck no. That's stupid. You're stupid. This question is stupid. That answer is stupid." Maura rose to her feet, her red eyes glowing and horns turning black as she balled her fists. "If I slap Nathan's dick between my ass, do we get a dick burger? People call these buns." She slapped her huge ass, causing the bronzed flesh to jiggle beneath her dress.
"I think they mean buns made of bread," Laura answered, eyes wide.
Maura shook with fury. Laura's eyes glittered with amusement, despite her innocent expression. So this was what the twins did to amuse themselves when he wasn't around. No wonder Kadria messed with them so much. "I think we can move on," Nathan said, before the two started brawling.
"Aw, do we?" Laura whined. "But Maura just said she wants your dick in her ass."
"I mean, I do, but that's not what I said," the supposedly smarter succubus said. "Moving on," Nathan said louder.
"Okay,"
the twins chirped. "I want to make a deal with you," he declared. Malevolent grins split the faces of both succubi. Their red eyes gleamed as they leaned toward him, their voluptuous tits hanging from their tiny frames.
"Then you know what you need to do," Laura murmured.
"Let us in," Maura purred. "I'll even deliver that little goat to you, wrapped up however you like." Their fingers ran over his crotch, but he ignored them, despite the pressure of his erection. "No." They blinked at him. "I didn't say I agreed to your deal," he corrected. "I'm offering a new deal, on my own terms. You can take it or leave it." Their eyes glowed. Before they reacted, he reached out and slammed his hands on their shoulders. Both succubi fell to their knees in front of him. Nathan glared down at them. "None of this bullshit about how you enter my mind and control me. I'm not stupid. Your promises will mean nothing the moment you get past my defenses," he spat. "I don't need to hear Kadria's advice to know how untrustworthy you are."
"I've taught you plenty about mental magic," Maura said.
"Yes, and that's why I know how dangerous it is to let you into my head. It's also why I'm offering you this deal at all." She fell silent. Her expression told him to get on with it. "If you want out of here, it's on my terms. You'll serve me," he told them. "I'll connect to your minds. That will give you access to the Binding Stone's power, but controlled by me."
"You're turning us into glorified champions?" Maura spluttered. "I'm not your pet."
I mean, we could be, Laura murmured. When Maura glared at her, she pretended to be angry.
How dare you?
Great effort, Maura grumbled.
Call it what you want. It's either this or nothing. Right now, I can use you. But later, who knows? You're stuck in this shitty little mental hole. Kadria treats you like her personal entertainment. At some point, I'll learn enough mental magic to sever the mental tether you have to my binding stone, and then you're gone forever.
They both froze, eyes widening in terror. Laura turned on her sister.
You fucking idiot! Why have you taught him that shit?
Because he's hot, Maura mumbled, as her sister pummeled her with her fists. Well, so much for Nathan's theory about which sister was dumber. Neither were particularly smart, it seemed. Laura scowled.
I'd hit you harder, but I get it. This new bad boy twist on him is great. He's not really my type otherwise, other than a quick ride. But this darker, bend-over side has me going.
You're so stupid, Maura said. The twins glared at each other.
I think you're forgetting something, Nathan said, coughing. He pushed them back down, as they had moved around a lot in their excitement. My deal is that you serve me. No mental nonsense, and you won't turn on me. In exchange, I'll protect you from anything Kadria has planned in the future, and won't remove you from this world. If you break it, then I have a tether right to your minds.
Oh, this sounds super hot. I say yes, Laura chirped,
arms raised in a small cheer.
What? Maura snapped. Are you crazy? Oh, come on. He's got everything we want. We've made dumber deals before.
That's a low fucking bar. Maura's eyes glowed, her horns turned black, and a wind blew across the grass. The dresses of both twins blew up, revealing a lot of skin and giving Nathan a glimpse of how incredibly wet they were.
Here's my answer, Maura growled, staring Nathan in the eyes. Fuck no.
Then a ton of stone slammed into Nathan's mind. His vision blurred. He held on tightly to both twins, desperately reaching for his magic. His efforts felt futile. He couldn't string two words together. His thoughts jumbled. All sense of reality became scrambled. Sometime later, Nathan didn't know if it had been seconds, days, or even centuries, his vision returned. He felt a wet warmth on his cock. It ran up and down his length. Soon, the slapping of flesh filled his ears, along with ecstasy-laden moans. A pair of hands pressed down on his bare chest. Two familiar breasts jiggled in front of his eyes, but an even larger mound lay below them. Nathan recognized the chest as Faye's, but that belly... Faye crouched over him, her movements as intense as always during sex.
More, more! I love you so much, she moaned.
Faye's black hair streamed down her back and plump ass. She looked several years older than her current self, but had the same youthful look in her eyes. Her tail wagged back and forth in rhythm with her pumping. Her bloated belly bounced with her movements. She was pregnant, Nathan realized.
Don't ignore me,
Naughty Mae's voice whined from the side. Nathan looked over to see the fox crouched next to him. Like Faye, Naughty Mae was also visibly pregnant. Otherwise, she looked the same as always. She moaned sweetly when he showed her some attention with a free hand. The room smelled of sex and the arousal of countless women. More pregnant women appeared around him. Seraph, Sen, Nerevia, and Vera. For some reason, Leopold's champion, Mae, was here, but Nathan didn't think too hard about her. A bunch of beastkin knights and champions crowded around the bed, many already full of his seed from earlier in the day. This was Nathan's life now,
All of his problems had been solved. Now he enjoyed his life with his massive harem of women. Every day was nothing but endless pleasure and sex. The door to his impossibly large bedroom opened, and even more naked women streamed in. They smiled at him. The first one that caught his eye was, why did she have no face? The world froze. Nathan's wits began to slowly return to him. His mind felt groggy. He tried to pull out from the fake fae on top of him, but found himself frozen in place.
Oh, come on. You definitely have dozens more women you want to bang for the rest of your life.
Mora's voice murmured inside his mind.
Be happy for once in your miserable fucking life. Do you want to know more about how you won? Look, there's Kadria's head on the wall. You realized she's playing you and mounted her like a goddamn deer.
Out of nowhere, Kadria's decapitated head appeared on the closest wall. It was mounted on a wooden plaque that read, Dumb Little Goat. She had an apple in her mouth.
Or maybe you want us dead. Fine, whatever.
The twins' heads appeared on either side of Kadria's. For whatever reason, their skin wasn't bronzed. Instead, they had fair skin. Their white hair had turned blonde as well.
Oops, fucked up there.
The heads flickered and now looked like the twins that Nathan recognized.
See, this is the happy ending. We're dead. Your harem will give you babies for all eternity. Any woman you know, they can appear here. Bam, yours forever. Happiest place for you. No wars, no schemes. Just sex, sex, sex. Great, right?
Nathan tried to shut her out. He reached blindly for his essence and his magic. For some reason, it felt so far away.
All you need to do is let me in,
Mora roared. The world shattered like a mirror. Nathan's head felt like someone was crushing it in a vise while driving a pick through it. A moment later, he felt worms crawling around in his skull. Pain stabbed at him from every direction, including from within. Darkness overwhelmed him. Memories of his past replayed within his mind. Failure after failure struck him. Death after death. He lost count of the number of times he saw Kiana's pallid face, heard the last words of Yfela, Vala, or Narime, or said goodbye to Gareth. But slowly, he regained his composure. The pain didn't dull. The darkness eroding his vision never left him. His failures didn't cease to hurt. Nothing changed reality for Nathan. He stood up, took a deep breath, and reached for his binding stones. And found them. The first surge of power blew away the intrusion. He then focused himself and cast an actual mental magic spell and righted himself. His vision blurred again. When he regained his vision, the familiar yet strange world of the twins greeted him. The fake sky that shined sunlight on his face and created wind, and the smell of freshly cut grass. Once again, he felt a warm, wet sensation around his cock. He looked down to see Mora wrapped around his engorged length. Her naked tits pillowed his shaft, while her mouth worked his tip. She glared up at him. Despite the failure of her mental attack, Mora kept sucking away. Nathan groaned, the pressure in his crotch almost too much. He felt her tickling away at the edges of his mind, refusing to completely retreat. Every time she tapped his defenses, he felt a surge of pleasure. Reflexively, he gripped her horns. A moment later, he exploded in her mouth. Streams of thick white seed flooded her throat. He heard her gulping down her meal.
You're spilling it, Laura murmured.
She ducked in and lapped up the drops that burst from Mora's lips. Laura's hands massaged his balls, ensuring that every possible drop came out. Both succubi wanted everything from him. When he pulled away, they fought over the tiny remains dribbling out from his tip.
I could get used to having this on tap, Laura said.
You're not thinking of accepting, Mora asked.
Oh, come on. You just proved we can't claim him. That was our best shot. I even helped you. If that doesn't work, we're done.
Laura rolled her eyes.
It's not my fault the asshole wants to be a miserable shit.
Mora glared up at Nathan.
Do you hate being happy or something? Your deepest defenses are fucking awful to wade through. So much damn misery. Your core is locked up like a vault, and all I had to work with were the women we saw when we invaded. And even at the end there, you just shrugged off all that shit. Most people go catatonic when I turn their own memories on them.
He grimaced. I should punish you for that, but I already am. Servitude or death. Your options haven't changed.
You didn't answer me, Mora said.
You didn't ask a question. He shrugged. Those memories are something I live with every day. I'm a bastion. I need to keep moving forward, and that means coming to terms with my past mistakes. A lot of my life is formed from regrets, but those are what make me who I am. That's why I didn't want your fake ending. Is it really an ending if there's no journey to reach it?
That almost sounds profound, Mora mumbled. Damn. No wonder you never got picked up as a messenger. I'd been wondering why someone like you got passed over, given your talent. You're too fucking optimistic. Didn't Kadria kill everyone you love? And here you are, trucking on with her, sucking your cock.
He stared down at the twins. Your answer? He asked, feeling that this conversation had outlived its usefulness.
Oh, I vote yes, Laura chirped.
Of course you do, Mora sighed. You mean that you'll protect us?
I do.
Then fuck. I guess I'm in. I can't believe after all this time we've ended up being tamed. Guess Mom was right. Once you find a man you like, you settle down, Mora said.
Then both succubi latched onto his cock like limpets. If this was their idea of settling down, Nathan had serious concerns about his ability to leave his bedroom in the future. Don't resist me, he warned, or I'll have to use force.
Yeah, we want out. Get it over with.
Mora waved her hand in the air. The process itself was quick. Both succubi kept their minds locked up tight as he entered them. Nathan was reminded of how little he really knew. They essentially guided him to their mental core, but prevented him from accessing any of their thoughts or emotions. If he strayed, their defenses would no doubt activate. He attached a powerful mental tether to both of their cores. At the same time, he also laid failsafes. One warned him if the tether was destroyed. The other would destroy the tether if too much magic was sent toward Nathan through it. If the twins tried to attack him using his link, it would sever itself.
Ha! Not bad, Mora said. I can probably deactivate the warning, but dunno about the other thing. What does it even do?
It's a self-destruct, right?
The other twin said, frowning.
Why didn't you make it blow up our minds if the tether breaks?
Because another succubus might break the tether. I'm not that callous, he said. The two of them continued to blow him between words.
You should be that callous, but whatever.
I guess you're the boss.
So, what's the plan?
Mora asked, her face an absolute mess. We're going to fight another messenger. The twins grinned up at him, their faces the very picture of excitement. Chapter 35. Leaving the twins behind, Nathan returned to his office. His champions jumped when he emerged. They were standing around the tables, chatting and discussing strategy. "You didn't see the door open?" he asked. Genuinely surprised, they still couldn't see the door, even after learning about it.
"No. In fact, I don't even remember when you left."
Seraph rubbed her temples with her fingertips.
"This isn't the first time you've walked out of that door in front of me, is it?"
"No. Something about the door prevents people from remembering anything associated with it," Nathan said.
I remember having sex in there pretty well," Sen said.
Everyone looked at her, and she scowled at them.
"What? I do. I just don't remember a lot of other things. Sunstorm's the same way. I hadn't seen Nathan for ages. Like hell, I wasn't going to fuck him."
Sunstorm nodded enthusiastically.
"So, is it done?" Nadimei asked.
Nathan quickly checked the state of his tethers with the twins, just in case they knew a trick to double-cross him. The connections remained intact, although he felt them doing something to the tether, some sort of reinforcement. The fact they could mess with the mental connection at all suggested that Nathan hadn't constructed it very well. He needed to ask Kadria for some advice on managing this link.
"Yes, I've bound the succubi in this portal to my will," he said, avoiding the comparison to champions for obvious reasons.
"Allies?"
Astra asked.
"I wouldn't go that far," Nathan replied cautiously. "But I have leverage over them. Consider them servants."
"Slaves,"
the dark elf declared. The beastkin grimaced. Unfortunately, it was the most apt description.
"What's next? I've already mobilized the knights in the portal. I assume that's where we're going next," Seraph said.
"It is. Even though we're in a rush, we can't mess this up. The only thing worse than a messenger invading the spires is allowing him to invade us as well, or triggering a cascade," he said.
Despite his words, making preparations didn't take long. Garrick Pass had extensive defenses against attack from both within and without. Nathan had a lot of soldiers to work with. As they left, Sunstorm remained behind. Nathan and Sen spotted her and stopped. In response to Nadime's questioning gaze, Nathan waved the rest on.
"Cho, what's wrong?" Sen asked.
Oh, they're all gone," Sunstorm said, initially getting angry over her name.
She rubbed her hands against her arms and grimaced.
"This is going to be a huge battle against demons, isn't it?"
"Yes, you've missed the big invasions. It'll be great to fight together."
Sen grinned and punched her friend in the arm.
"Yeah."
Sunstorm ignored Sen and looked Nathan in the eye.
"Nathan, I want to go help Anna."
Sen froze, her grin cracking. Her eyes showed the panic inside her.
"Cho, stop for a second and explain," Nathan said. "You're not alone." "Maybe, but can I really help you in such a huge battle? I excel in one-on-one fights. I'm an assassin. I kill people and other champions, other bastions. Anna's going to be swimming in targets that she needs help dealing with. I can collect a lifetime's worth of heads."
Sunstorm smirked, but her eyes remained distant.
"You've never shied away from battle before."
"What's really wrong?" Nathan said, remembering the fierce warrior he always sent to solve messes. Sunstorm shrugged. Annoyed, Sen punched the assassin. This time, the blow was intended to hurt. Unfortunately, Sunstorm was a champion. She rolled her eyes at Sen.
"Stop being a bitch! This is about your gem, isn't it?" Sen said. "I thought you said it was fine."
"It is," Sunstorm admitted. "I don't want to be the burden in a group of duo gems and a tri-gem. I can do things everyone else can't, but not on a battlefield full of demons. That messenger will eat me for breakfast."
"Fine," Nathan said. "Anna will need the help, but we're going to talk about this later. I just finished grumping at Faye and the others about not being honest." Doesn't this count as honesty?
The assassin tried to smile at him, but it faded away under his stare.
Okay, fine. And thanks.
Stay safe, Cho, Nathan said. He squeezed her shoulder. Nathan and Sen left as Sunstorm vanished in a puff of darkness. On the way to the portal, Nathan ensured he collected Alice's hand mirror. He needed some way to remain in contact during battle. While he liked helping his champions with their problems, he hoped there weren't too many more lingering beneath the surface. Nathan wanted a happy ending eventually, one that he earned himself. By the time he arrived at the portal, Fay had taken charge. Knights trooped down the valley in front of him. At a glance, nothing appeared amiss. The sky inside the portal was a familiar hazy red, and purple light shined from the volcanic ground beneath him. The world of this portal gave off the appearance of an otherworldly wasteland. Twin valleys ran down to a clearing at the bottom, and rocky cliffs kept him inside. He walked down to the bottom. There he found his champions and knights massed around a craggy mound. Obsidian spikes arced out from the mound, forming a pretty pattern that Nathan found unfamiliar, but the mound itself was unoccupied. During an invasion, the air itself would split open here. Demons would pour through in the thousands. But all was quiet. Nothing stirred, save for Nathan's soldiers. They lined up behind him, many carrying canisters and barrels. Every few minutes, several demons did phase into appearance. The portal's activity levels remained elevated from the twins' attack, so demons crossed over passively, but they were swiftly dealt with. Nathan's champions took turns dealing with the ones that appeared today.
So, we're here. What now?
Narime asked. As if to answer her, rays of light shot out from the obsidian spikes. The sky flickered black. The twins snapped into existence high above them, their monochrome dresses fluttering in a non-existent wind. Once again, they didn't wear any underwear, and gave everybody a great view of their crotches.
"Tremble, mortals!"
Laura shouted, throwing her arms up in a strange pose.
"Your doom has come!"
Magic amplified her voice and made it sound halfway intimidating. A shame about her appearance. Mora stared at her sister before running a hand down her face. Nathan's champions tensed. The rattle of weapons rung out behind him as his knights prepared their weapons. Gasps and shouts filled the air.
"Shut up and get down here," Nathan yelled at them. "Everybody else maintain positions. We're not being invaded. Like you've been told, they're under my control. This portal is tamed."
"Spoil sport," Laura pouted.
"I told you to shut up."
He angrily waved a hand at her to come down.
"I don't need my knights trying to fight you because they buy into your dumb charade."
The two succubi drifted toward him.
"Thank fuck," Mora said. "That was embarrassing."
"Like you don't do the same thing,"
Laura glared at her sister.
"I make actual threats. What was this?"
Mora mimicked the arm movements that Laura had made earlier.
"Do you think you're on TV?"
"They look cool."
"No, they don't," Nathan and Mora said together.
"See, I win."
Mora pushed her sister's head down. Nathan's champions stared at the antics in amazement. So did a lot of his knights. Hushed whispers rippled through their ranks. Many of these knights had battled against the twins. Now they watched as they obeyed Nathan's directions and messed around.
"So you're actually under his control?" Nerevia asked. "This isn't some complicated act, and you'll suddenly turn around and attack us all because we didn't see the signs of betrayal?"
"Yeah, as dumb as it is, we're his."
Mora jabbed her thumb at Nathan.
"Want him to fuck me on top of you to make sure?"
"That wouldn't prove a thing. You're a succubus,"
Narime said.
"But it'd be hot."
Mora's grin nearly split her face in half. Convinced that everything was safe, Seraph stepped aside and gestured to the knights.
Those carrying canisters and barrels walked to the base of the mound. They unplugged the barrels and began pouring oil and tar everywhere. The canisters were planted in small pits filled with oil and sand, with their tops sticking out. The twins stopped messing around. They stared at the preparations with wide, terrified eyes. With each passing second, they edged closer to Nathan. When one of the canister-carrying knights got too close, they hopped behind him.
"You're fucking evil, you know that?"
Mora growled.
"Did you have this shit prepared for us?"
"The geyser minefield wasn't strong enough, but my tests with the propane gas proved pretty effective," Nathan said.
"I think you need to use a stronger word than effective," Sen said dryly. "I helped with those tests. Evil is the right word, if you ever use this stuff against humans. I can replicate it with spells, but that stuff is terrifying as well."
"I can't believe you're scared of it," Seraph said.
"I saw you shrug off everything we threw at you last time."
"Yeah, well, I like my limbs where they are, thank you. I don't care if you're into that sort of thing, Nathan, but I'm not."
Mora formed a big X with her arms.
"Let's establish that as my limit in the bedroom."
"Soft," Astra said.
"Well, sorry, princess, I'm not fucking immortal."
Mora rolled her eyes.
"Although the way you scream when you—"
"Enough!" Nathan snapped.
Everybody stared at him. Astra's eyes focused on Mora.
"When I—" the dark elf said.
She swallowed, then pressed on.
"I can feel pain?"
"How?"
Mora and Laura stared at Nathan, who glared at them.
"Yeah, take it up with the big guy. He holds our leashes."
"Later, Astra. Mora, Laura, I forbid you to talk about anything about the timelines."
Nathan ran a hand down his face. "I think I understand why Kadria didn't tell me everything at first."
Bad time, but I wanted to say that Ifrit is laughing at you," Sen said.
"Tell him to go fuck himself," Nathan said.
"Wise ass, undying spirit who knew everything."
Anything else we should shut up about? I mean, I have no idea what we're even doing here,"
Mora said, looking around.
"Like you said, we're going to attack another messenger."
"I'm going to open a connection to an active portal that a messenger is using. You're going to control the cascade that will result. You can do that, can't you?"
Nathan raised an eyebrow.
"I've seen you messengers mess around with the ley lines and portals a lot."
"We're tapped into your binding stone now, so yeah, super easy."
Mora shrugged.
"We'll channel the overflow through you and into the magic rock here. Normally this would be a bad idea, but you'll be fine."
Several questioning looks penetrated Nathan, but he waved them off.
"One final question," Seraph said, refocusing attention to herself. "How does Nathan prevent you from betraying him? He didn't deny you were slaves earlier, but you aren't acting subservient."
Mora laughed, while Laura merely smiled. Both succubi gave him sidelong looks and licked their lips.
"Slaves, huh? Is that how you want us to act, master?"
Laura added a strange accent to master, as if she were tasting the word.
"Ooh, I could get addicted to saying that."
"You're such a sub," Mora said. "But no, we're not slaves, unless you are."
"I'm not, no," Seraph replied coldly.
"There you go. What Nathan did to us isn't any different to you champions. The difference is you're a human and we're not. We need a connection to this world to safely remain in it," Mora explained.
"So, Nathan?"
"No, the Binding Stone. If all we needed was some chump's mind, this world would be demon food in 5 seconds. The magic rocks are the world. The little goat could explain it better, but they're basically magical chunks of the planet itself. Destroying one would be equivalent to ending the world, or at least a large chunk of it. That's basically what the boss is doing when he does his thing.
Mora made a biting motion with her hand. So, Kadria had been telling the truth when she said that her boss ate the world he conquered. Then Mora turned to Nathan and pointed at him.
Which is why you need to protect this tether to us. We can't touch you because of the self-destruct, but if it gets cut while we're outside the portals, bad things happen.
Define bad, Nathan asked.
The local authorities descend and erase us from existence,
Mora said, her voice deadly serious. Nathan blinked. Did she seriously mean that Omria would obliterate any messenger not connected to a binding stone? Was that why they were so important?
I mean, eventually, Mora corrected. Messengers don't belong in this world. We use the binding stones to blend in. That's why we use the portals. Prepare the invasion in them, bust through, grab the rock, destroy the planet. Then you bastions started fighting us in the portals, and it became this dumb tug-of-war game.
Fun tug-of-war game, Laura said.
I'm lost, Faye said.
Yeah, Ifrit won't explain anything. I get the feeling he knows all of this,
Sen grumbled.
Or if he doesn't, then he doesn't like what he's learning.
Nathan, I'd ask if you're making the right decision, but I get the feeling I know the answer,
Narime said, her tails tickling his back.
Yeah, some of this is new. Parts of it are familiar. None of it changes anything. There's no such thing as light heresy, he said.
Is it really heresy if you win? Seraph asked. There are a lot of things the Dark Elves claim as heresy that the Empire doesn't.
He stared at her, then looked at the twins. Nobody paid them any attention. Many of his knights were devout, but they didn't scream and run away. As far as his soldiers cared, Nathan was a devout bastion of Omria. He claimed to have tamed the messengers and was defending Domar. Heresy didn't enter into the equation.
I'll worry about that later, he said. I think we're ready. Get everybody into formation. Once we open the gateway, the invading demons will turn around and attack us.
The twins shot into the air above the mound and hovered on opposite sides of it. The knights formed up into ranks at the edge of the clearing, shields raised as they defended the exits. Towering suits of armor stood in front of them, powered by Nathan's magic. More summons occupied the stone walls behind them, just in case any demons made it through. Only Nathan and his champions stood in the clearing itself. Sen began casting spells, pentagons flaring over her greatsword as she prepared for the incoming attack. Her flames would set off the oil and gas trap. Nathan reached for his binding stones. Then he began to focus the power. This was a form of ascended magic, he realized. He had been taught that it was binding stone magic, an extension of how he used the power to create his summons and castle. But that was wrong. He knew better now. Gareth had created this technique during the evacuation of Trafome in their original world. It had been the second to last of his great feats. His last one had killed him, when he cast a ninth-rank spell so great that it wiped out hundreds of square miles full of demons and slew a messenger. Now, Nathan took on his old mentor's mantle. He refined the spell that Gareth had taught him. Reaching out through the ley lines, Nathan found the active portal in the spires. Then he connected it to Garrick Pass. Thunder rippled across the clearing. Wind burst into existence, knocking down several of his champions. Nathan remained standing. Above him, the twins' bodies shimmered with darkness. He felt the demonic energy of the cascade surge through the connection he had created. A moment later, it hit him like a truck. His vision swam. Hands wrapped around him, but he remained standing. Slowly, the world returned to normal. A window of white stood in the center of the mound. It stood dozens of feet tall, was blindingly bright, and always appeared to face Nathan. A moment later, the first demons appeared from it. Chapter 36. The beasts charged through the gateway. Animalistic roars erupted from them as they emerged. Their weapons banged against their armor, and their armored greaves rumbled throughout the clearing. Every demon looked slightly different, but all of them were bestial monsters. They had twisted visages created from the animal kingdom, spliced with a brutish human physique, and given blood-red skin. Hundreds of them poured forth. A few looked around in confusion, but most didn't bother. Nathan didn't know if demons were intelligent or if they operated on animal instincts. Kadria had implied they were weapons, created for the purpose of invading Domar. "Sen," he barked. The red pentagons around her sword glowed brightly. A moment later, she cast her fifth-rank spell. A plume of flame blocked off the demon's advance. The wall of fire encircled the gateway, and the demons found themselves with no way forward. They pushed up to the flames, but no farther. More and more demons poured forward. They splashed around in the oil. A few looked down. One even pulled out a canister of gas. The fire spell had been cast far away from the trap Nathan had set.
"Heavies," Seraph said grimly, looking past the demons.
Hulking demons strode through the gateway, carrying halberds with blades as large as a person. Each of these heavies wore armor as thick as Nathan's fist. They towered over their smaller brethren and knocked them about, as if in amusement.
"Wow, they really do look nasty," Sen said.
"Yeah, we call them heavies because that's what they are. Hulking brutes with massive weapons," Nathan said. The wall of flames showed no sign of wavering. The demons began chanting and beating their chests. Given more time, they would use human wave tactics. Demon wave tactics, Nathan supposed. In the previous invasion, they had climbed the walls by using bodies as shields. A wall of flames could be suppressed with enough bodies, especially if those bodies were covered in solid steel.
"That's enough, Sen," he ordered.
"Got it!"
She pointed her sword at the sky and began casting a supercharged fourth-rank spell. A pair of glowing squares appeared around her. Moments later, meteors crashed into the mass of demons. The world shook with a series of explosions. Thwooms rippled across the clearing. Great, hot, searing balls of red-hot fire shot 100 feet into the air. Gore rained from the sky. The laughter of the twins broke through the cacophony of crackling flames, deafening explosions, and screaming knights. Nathan's soldiers cowered in fear. The heat billowed against him, and he covered his face with his hand. He felt like he was standing in front of an open furnace. More canisters of gas went off as the flames cooked off the oil and superheated the sand around them. The demons, still alive, panicked as their surroundings filled with fire and earth. Their choices were grim. If they remained near the gateway, the demons would be blown apart or cooked alive. But fleeing took them through a white-hot wall of flames. They took their chances and charged through Sen's spell. Only the heavies made it through. Narime and Sen put them out of their misery with judicious use of their fiery spells. Kiana stared at the destruction grimly. The rest of his champions remained unfazed. Astra appeared openly joyful and even clapped as each canister exploded, her eyes glowing with excitement. "Boom! Ha ha!" she said with a grin. "I like these!"
"Holy fucking shit, Nathan," Nerevia said. "Remind me never to make you mad. I thought they were joking about the spells you used. Is the flesh-eating flood real?"
"They're demons. Anything less than total destruction isn't enough," he said, blood pouring down his face. "They'll overwhelm us with a tide of bodies if we let them." The rain of blood had stopped. Kiana pulled a lace handkerchief from her uniform and used it to clean off Nathan's face. He tried not to screw up his face as she wiped around his nose.
Is now the time?
He asked Kiana.
She stuck her tongue out at him. You shouldn't leave blood on your face. It might make you sick.
I can't get sick. Especially now. That surge of energy he had felt when the twins had stopped the cascade terrified Nathan. For a moment, he thought he was going to die. He had been certain his heart had stopped. His nerves buzzed with magical energy, and his binding stone reserves had all been topped up. Was this what true power felt like? The twins had effortlessly accomplished what Gareth had spent his entire life trying to understand. Cascades had remained the one thing that escaped humanity's understanding in Nathan's old world. Now, Nathan controlled a pair of succubi who effortlessly manipulated them. He had deviated so far from the path of a bastion, he couldn't even see it anymore. Whatever. It didn't matter. The gateway shimmered. It began to grow.
That's not good, Nathan uttered.
Should it be doing that? Kiana asked.
The twins drifted backward, putting distance between them and whatever was coming through.
Knights, throw more canisters into the flames, Nathan snapped. Now!
A dozen beastkin charged forward and hurled the small containers of gas into the burning flames. They bounced and rolled into the flames. Nothing happened immediately, as they needed time to heat up and explode.
Something truly massive emerged through the gateway. A hulking blue head, the size of a house. A single black horn stuck out from its forehead, and dozens of beady black eyes covered its carapace-like skin. The beast emerged, standing over 50 feet tall. In place of hands, it had claws the size of people. Its body was covered in a thick shell of steel, which was painted with garish colors.
Behemoth, Seraph said, eyes wide. She took a step back.
I've never seen one before. Nathan, Ifrit says to run,
Sen squeaked.
That thing is apparently immune to magic.
It's not, he snapped. The armor needs penetrating spells. You've been practicing those.
Before they could continue, the gas canisters erupted. The explosions ripped into the beast. Flame shot beneath its armor. Parts of its blue carapace cracked from the heat. The behemoth bellowed in pain, the force of its yell loud enough to force Nathan to cover his ears. Faye, Kiana, and Narime snapped their hands over their ears in pain. The ground quaked as the behemoth fell to its knees. The flames seared its flesh. Its black eyes glowed red, shooting around like crazy.
It's weak, Faye chirped.
She shot forward, flames around her arms. Then she hurled them at the monster. The blue fire latched onto the behemoth. Unlike normal demons, which melted like wax upon impact from Faye's flames, the behemoth lit up like a huge candle. The beast tried to roar, but the attempt only allowed the fire into its lungs. Faye continued to pump her flames into the monster. A manic grin stretched across her face. Her sapphires glowed so bright that Nathan worried they were going to explode. Nathan wondered how Faye kept this up. Was her duogem ability that powerful? Faye now had a form of magical vampirism. She regained magic using her flames. In effect, she was eating the behemoth. The huge monster collapsed in on itself suddenly, its body failing. The heavy armor crushed what remained of it. Dust billowed up. Faye stopped using her ability. Her flames flickered out of existence a few seconds later.
Wow, that was easy.
The catgirl flicked her long black hair and preened for Nathan.
Good job, Faye.
He walked up and scratched behind her ears. Her tail flicked back and forth in pleasure.
I'm surrounded by monsters, Nerevia said.
Astra punched her in the side, then walked forward. With a sweep of her arm, the trigem blew out the remaining flames. A gale of wind blew across the clearing. No more demons surged through.
The twins descended and poked their arms through the gateway, as if testing that it worked.
"Are you coming with us?" Seraph asked Nathan. "Your binding stones won't work once you go through. It's dangerous."
"I'll manage," he grunted. Kiana stuck to him like glue as they approached the gateway. Behind them, his knights formed up. Faye and Nadime peeled off to give them orders. He paused and looked around. As much as it hurt him to think it, this might be the last time he saw some of his champions. He burned their faces in his mind. Faye, Sen, Kiana, Seraph, Nadime, Nerevia, and Astra.
"Don't," Astra said, staring at him. "Weak eyes."
"Saw right through me, huh?" He grimaced. "I regretted not saying goodbye last time."
Sen clapped him on the back.
"Then make sure you don't need to say goodbye this time. We're not going anywhere, Nathan. And if I'm in any danger, I'll jump behind the idiots floating around over there."
She pointed at the twins. Kiana and Sen pushed him forward, but he did note that they remained close to him.
"Let's go," Nathan said.
He stepped through the gateway. Chapter 37. The world on the other side of the gateway looked familiar to Nathan, not because it was a volcanic hellscape, which it was, but because he had been before, but not when he defended the spires. "I know this place," he said, looking around in wonder. All portals were formed of two core sections, the valley and the clearing. The clearing contained the rift that the demons invaded through, and Nathan had opened the gateway here. The valley was the long stretch that the demons charged through to reach the exit. The role of a bastion was to prevent the demons and any messengers from getting from the clearing to the far end of the valley. But this portal turned all concept of that idea on its head, at least at first glance. There were two clearings. One stood above the other, separated by steep cliffs. Winding pathways built from marble and bone connected the two and extended over the glowing abyss that was visible over the edges of the cliffs. Slate towers extended above the walkways, and their bases sat in the bottom clearing. Nathan stood atop a throne crafted from bone. It stood hundreds of feet tall, with winged arches that rose even higher above him. Behind him, his champions and knights marched onto its cracked surface. They stared in warped fascination at their surroundings. Far below him, in the bottom clearing, was a stone wall that marked the exit from the portal. A brutal battle took place around it. In fact, a battle took place everywhere. Dark elves and countless summons filled the towers overlooking the bone walkways. They fired catapults, ballistae, and a variety of wicked siege weapons onto the demons below them. Behemoths swung their claws at the towers in return, and some could reach the towers. Nathan watched as a behemoth took out the middle of a tower. Screams echoed across the entire battlefield as hundreds of dark elves were crushed beneath the ruins of a collapsing tower. Far below them, a swarm of demons rushed the survivors. The bottom clearing seethed with an uncountable red mass of beasts and dozens of behemoths. An endless light show of magic and gem abilities blew apart hundreds of demons at a time, and sometimes felled a behemoth. But more came, never ending. The spire's defenses slowly failed. This was the difficulty in fighting a messenger. They warped the portal, and a bastion couldn't change the terrain itself. This terrain favored the attacker, and left the dark elves on the back foot. Nathan had been fairly lucky that the twins hadn't done something similarly awful. Standing around him, none of his champions said anything. Even Nerevia was speechless, as she saw her homeland beaten back.
"Oh, wow. I think I know this guy," Mora said, as she landed next to Nathan.
"He invaded Trefome," Nathan said in response. "I forget his name, but his power was obscene.
He gave no warning, then attacked Sorol, the capital, and destroyed it overnight. By the time we defeated him, the entire eastern half of Trafome had been overrun by demons.
Wait, Trafome? Seraph hissed. Wasn't that one of the last nations to fall?
Yes. We had several Trigem champions between everyone when we took him down. Nathan took a deep breath. This is bad.
I mean, we're here, Laura said.
Less talk, more fight, Astra said.
She blurred past them and leaped off the throne. Her cape fluttered in the air behind. Then the effect was ruined as Astra snapped her arms out. Magic flared from her as she shredded the ranks of the demons below them.
Damn it, Nathan cursed. Seraph, Narime, Fae, Nerevia, I need you to command the knights. We need to prevent the gateway from being overrun by demons. Kiana, Sen, you're with me. You two, he pointed at the twins, protect the gateway.
What?
The succubi whined, holding each other's hands as they pressed themselves against Nathan. No matter how big their tits were, Nathan couldn't feel them through his breastplate. Don't play dumb. If the messenger gets past us, he'll be through the gateway within seconds. He's a spatial manipulator. Nathan pointed at both of them. Just like the two of you. Keep him out.
Yeah. You better show us a good time after this, Mora said, rolling her eyes.
The champion split up in response to Nathan's orders. He drew his sword and ran forward up to the edge of the platform they were on. As he expected, a ramp of pearly bone descended to the volcanic wasteland below. In the distance, he saw the entrances to the pathways to the lower level. Demons massed around them. None of them paid attention to the hundreds of beastkin knights clattering down the ramp. Those demons who had noticed the portal closing had been blown apart several minutes ago. Nathan saw Astra in a mass of corpses. Her enemies barely had time to turn toward her before she obliterated them. The demons' bodies slowly disintegrated after they died, but Astra killed them faster than this happened. At a glance, Astra's movement looked absurd. She punched or kicked the air. Her arms swung about wildly. Sometimes she even did flips or spun about. But the piles of slowly vaporizing corpses told a different story. Her opals glowed. Every punch blew holes through demons. Her kicks sent heads flying into the void. When she windmilled her arms around, the demons were turned up by an invisible meat grinder. Astra ground down hundreds of the beasts with a brutal ferocity. A behemoth lurched in her direction. Sen, fifth-rank spell. Use a penetrating version of Ifrit's lance, Nathan ordered.
Got it, Sen said.
She pointed her hand at the behemoth, and a pentagon flared into existence around it. Astra didn't wait for support. She grabbed the behemoth's horn with her gem ability. With a howl, the behemoth struggled against her. Slowly but surely, Astra pulled it to its knees. Then the behemoth lashed out with its claws. At least 50 demons were ground into paste in the process, as the hulking blue beast slammed its house-sized appendages into Astra. The ground shook. Dust and dirt flew up from the ground. Kiana gasped and moved in front of Nathan, reflexively. She raised her sword and shield. Sen maintained her focus, and the pentagon glowed bright red.
Now?
Wait for a clear shot at its head, Nathan said. Kiana looked at him in shock, then back at the behemoth. When their view cleared, Astra stood perfectly still. The points of the behemoth's claws dug into her, but no farther. All three of her opals glowed. In response, the dark elf began to rip the claws out, one by one. The behemoth tried to withdraw, but found itself held in place, despite its strength. Sen saw her chance. Her spell shot off. A massive lance, easily as large as one of the behemoth's claws, shot into the monster's face. It punched through its carapace in one shot. A moment later, lava streamed out from its wound.
Then the behemoth was dead, and its corpse disintegrated like any other demon.
Killing dozens of them will take forever, Sen said.
They're one of the most powerful greater demons there are, Nathan said. I'm glad I used this plan and didn't let Astra come here alone. We've shut off reinforcements by closing the portal. If we had to fight both a messenger and a never-ending tide of behemoths, I don't know if we could win. Both of his champions stared at him in shock. It's true. We don't win by denying reality, he said. I know this messenger. He's a mean piece of work. They caught up to Astra, who slowed down her advance to let them catch up. Of course, once they did reach her, she charged toward the next mass of demons. The enemies appeared to be unending. Nathan conserved his own strength. While he had four binding stones to draw on, he was far enough from his closest one that using them was inefficient. He needed to save his best spells for the messenger. What was his name again? All Nathan remembered was some over-the-top speech about how he was an apostle of doom, or something ridiculous like that. It had been true, given the damage he had done, but Nathan hated to let the messengers prattle on. In the distance, Nathan saw his army cut into the rear of the demons. His other champions led the attack and prevented his knights from engaging the most dangerous demons. The Beastkin knights used magic and enchanted equipment. While they were strong enough to fight ordinary demons, letting them fight heavies or a behemoth would result in a massacre. Even an enhanced or monogem champion had a huge edge over the knights. Blue flames consumed an entire walkway, and Nathan heard Faye's laughter. The catgirl danced through an entire column of demons by herself. Although she was ignoring his orders to support the knights, Nathan couldn't deny that she was effective. Her flames torched demons at a speed that matched even Astra's ferocity, and she could take down behemoths with focused effort. The danger was that the smaller demons quickly overran her, which is what was about to happen. Nathan watched as Faye concentrated on melting a behemoth, ignorant to the dozens of demons flanking her. Sen, over there, he snapped, pointing at Faye. Without another word, Sen sent meteors crashing down among the demons. When the catgirl jumped and looked over at them, Sen waved in return. Faye had the decency to look embarrassed. She pulled back afterward and supported the knights. On another walkway, Seraph and Nerevia joined forces to keep the demons at bay. Seraph's magical waves made short work of the heavies as she disintegrated their armor. Her regeneration ability allowed her to keep going against the weaker demons, and her energy waves destroyed equipment. The behemoth armor took longer to damage, given it was magic-resistant. But as cracks built up in it, Nerevia peppered the blue giants with glowing, explosive crossbow bolts. Her abilities were purely offensive, but allowed her to harm even the behemoths. The heads of heavies vanished if the dark elf so much as looked at them. Nathan imagined Nerevia's cackling as she swept about the battlefield in her hot pants and vest. Narime remained behind, by contrast. Her tails flattened dozens of heavies at a time, as necessary, turning the beasts into flattened piles of steel on the ground. If a behemoth got close, her gems glowed, and she blew holes through their armor. Narime's gem ability allowed her to ignore protective barriers and wards, making the anti-magic protections of the behemoths useless. In Nathan's old world, Narime had been his secret weapon to slaying behemoths. By combining her gem abilities, she had been able to blow behemoths apart with ease. The problem was the sheer exhaustion it caused. Dozens of behemoths waded through the ranks of the demons. If Nathan hadn't shut the portal, there'd be double or triple this number soon. He suspected most of the Dark Elf casualties came from the behemoths and the messenger. Without Astra to tear the blue giants apart one by one, their other champions needed to grind away at the horde of magic-resistant monsters. But Nathan had things under control now. His armies pushed down the walkways, wiping out the demons as they went. The Dark Elf towers closest to them cheered as they passed. Nathan saw a monogem champion slump over a parapet in exhaustion. She waved at Astra, tears streaming down her face.
"Wow, this is going really well," Sen said, as she hurled a lance over Astra's head. "Should I get some practice in as a spellblade?"
"Don't practice in real battles," Nathan said. "And the real thing is about to come. I think he's noticed us." Nathan finally spotted the messenger. A man walked among the demons in the bottom clearing. Mounds of earth and stone blocked his path. Barriers of light surrounded him. Boulders and fireballs rained down around him, vaporizing demons, but leaving him unharmed. The man wore a black robe in the same fashion of Narime's homeland. It had elegant black imagery embroidered along the edges and the baggy sleeves. His slick black hair was streaked with white and hung freely past his shoulders. In comparison to the demons, his figure was trim. Nathan towered over the man by almost a foot and could probably bench press him without magical assistance. The most obvious sign that this man was the messenger were the wings of bone arching out of his back. They stretched several feet in length and flexed with each step he took. The messenger carried a silver blade that had an eerie blue sheen. "That him?" Astra said. Her muscles tensed.
"Do not," Nathan snapped. He grabbed her shoulder.
"Enemy," she said, glaring at him. But she remained still. Nathan's argument fell away as the messenger looked up at them. For a moment, the eyes of the two men met. Bastion and messenger stared at each other. Then the messenger's jaw dropped. His face twisted in a mask of open shock and amazement. He pointed at Nathan with his free hand.
"You!" the messenger shouted, his voice booming across the entire battlefield.
Chapter 38.
After several awkward seconds, the messenger recovered his composure. He leveled his sword at Nathan. Instinctively, Nathan began casting defensive spatial wards. That silver blade could lop off his head from this distance.
"Bastion," the messenger boomed, "feel honored, for you are in the presence of the Apostle of Doom, Thanatos. Now, die."
Thanatos twisted his arm, pulled it back, then thrust his sword forward. Nathan felt the space in front of him warp. His chest tightened. Then something exploded against his spatial ward. It shattered like a pane of glass, and the glittering shards of magic dissipated within seconds. Nathan flew backward from the impact. He rolled end over end. His chest bloomed with pain. Somebody snatched him up, then set him down on his feet. He saw Astra in the distance, gesturing toward him with her arms.
"Nathan!"
Kiana screamed. She sprinted toward him. Thanatos appeared above them, his bone wings fanned out around his body. For a moment, he looked like an undead male vision of Omria. Then Nathan remembered that he had killed Thanatos before. Gods didn't die. Then again, neither did Thanatos, apparently. Before the messenger landed, Astra swatted him aside. He tumbled end over end down the walkway. His scream of outrage pierced Nathan's ears. Kiana grabbed Nathan's arm. She yanked him over her shoulder, trying to support him, as her tail swung back and forth wildly.
"I'm fine," he grunted out, trying to prevent her from ripping his arm off. "Astra, Sen, we're pulling back to the others."
They sprinted toward the gateway. The twins waved at him in the distance. Nathan ignored them, instead looking around for Faye and his other champions. The cat girl was closest, it turned out. She pulled her knights back and handed over command to Nerevia and Seraph. Nathan didn't know what Narime was doing. The fox maintained her position, possibly because the knights still needed support against the behemoths. Many of the demons had turned around.
Thanatos must have given them orders to attack Nathan's army.
Bastion, you can run, but you cannot flee doom, Thanatos shouted, his voice echoing around them. Not this time.
I think he remembers us, Sen said.
She quickly cast a spell that coated her sword with a white-hot glow, and sparks shot out from it occasionally. Then she began to cast a fifth-rank spell, knowing how long it took to cast it. From the walkway, a figure charged at them. Thanatos held his arms at his sides, his sword sheathed, and wings fanned out above him. Nathan felt that stance was horrendously inefficient. Unfortunately, Thanatos was a messenger. He moved as fast as Astra. Within seconds, he stood before them. His silver sword gleamed in the air. Astra swung at him. This time, the blow slammed into an invisible barrier. Thanatos smirked and held his sword aloft. The entire world thrummed with magic. Nathan felt the surge in his bones. His binding stones reacted sympathetically in his head. Instinctively, he looked at the gateway in fear. It remained in place, but had shrunk significantly. The twins were nowhere to be seen.
Strange, Thanatos said, his voice normal suddenly. That should have worked. Why can't I reopen the portal?
You can do that? Nathan asked.
I am the Apostle of Doom. I am inevitable. Your struggle only forestalls me.
Thanatos maintained his pose, with his sword pointed to the sky.
Even without the portal, I will crush you and undo the shame of losing to you before. Not that you remember.
Oh, Nathan remembered. No wonder he had forgotten so much about this obnoxious bastard. Nathan had repressed these memories. Thanatos was incorrigible. Were all messengers this annoying? Nathan remembered a couple being normal warriors.
Well then, back to the show, Thanatos said, his voice returning to his usual deafening volume.
Magic swelled around the messenger. The blue sheen of his sword consumed it, then erupted into flames. Soon, the entire man was a vortex of fire.
Sen, Fei, I need you to support me, he snapped.
Narime would have been useful as well. She had countered this in his old world, but the bulk of the demonic army continued to target them. The pressure had lessened on the Dark Elves, but they weren't helping Nathan. What was the Dark Elf Bastion doing? Sen snapped off her fifth-rank spell that she had prepared earlier. Fae's flames erupted toward Thanatos. Nathan planted his sword in the ground, then cast a supercharged fourth-rank spell. Astra and Kiana stood next to him, both of them gripping his sides. With a sweep of his sword, Thanatos sent his flames hurtling toward them. The vortex transformed into a solid wall of fire. The moment it struck Sen's spell, it consumed it. She squealed in shock. Nathan's spell was eaten in the same instant, and he cursed. Immediately, he reached for the binding stones in a panic. This spell had been countered by Narime. Then Fae's flames met Thanatos's. Both flames held the same shade of blue. They curled around each other in the air and seemed to dance around one another. Thanatos stared at the dancing flames, confused. Then he snapped his sword back, and his vanished. Fei did the same.
What sorcery is this? The messenger said, staring at the cat girl. Why do you have sapphires? Aren't you a swordswoman? I remember you cutting my arm off, not using my all-consuming flame.
Nathan didn't waste time listening to his confusion. Instead, he used the binding stone power he had drawn upon to prepare his own spatial spell. Astra got the point. She leaped at Thanatos, her arms blurring. His barrier snapped up, protecting him. She kept at it, running right for him. Fei joined her, her flame surging at the messenger.
crossbow bolt slammed into his side a moment later, as Nerevia provided long-range support.
"Enough of this!" Thanatos boomed.
He blinked forward, disappearing and reappearing in an instant. Faye screamed, but the breath was knocked out of her as he slapped her away. She went flying, right over the void surrounding the battlefield.
"Faye!" Nathan roared.
Before he moved, Astra snatched the cat girl from the air and hurled her back. Thanatos blinked again, but his attack slammed into Astra ineffectually. He froze.
"Oh, it's you. Why are you still alive?"
Astra responded by compressing his face with her fist. Thanatos stepped backward and slashed with his sword. Space ruptured. Impossibly, Astra's clothes tore open. She looked down and patted her skin. A thin line had appeared over her stomach. The skin hadn't torn, but Nathan saw the impression of a cut on her skin. Even after several seconds, her body and clothes didn't repair themselves.
"Damn, I thought that would work," the messenger grunted, his voice normal. "No, seriously, you're usually dead by now. I've fought you literally once."
The next second, Sen's lance soared toward him. His wings snapped shut. The lance dug deep into them. Lava burst out from it, and Thanatos screamed. He blinked again. This time, Nathan was ready. When Thanatos reappeared, Nathan's sword was there. Again, the messenger blurred, but only to spin around and block Nathan's attack. Both of them unleashed spatial spells at once. In an instant, both swords ceased to exist above their hilts. The blades simply vanished. Thanatos let out an inhuman scream and slapped Nathan away. The blow hurt, but he felt his connection to Kiana soften the impact. A barrier of light sprung up in existence between the messenger and Sen, as Kiana activated her gem.
"Enough! I've had enough!" Thanatos screamed. "I've had that sword for, I don't know how long, forever. I'm killing you all now."
Nathan felt the entire portal shudder. The ground rumbled. The sky changed color, transforming from a hazy red to bright gold. The magic around Nathan became stifling. The closest comparison was when the twins had channeled the cascade through him. Sen and the other champions collapsed, struggling to breathe. Only Astra remained standing, but she couldn't move. Her opals shined brightly. For whatever reason, she had been frozen in place.
"Hey, no breaking the rules!"
a familiar voice screamed. Mora crashed into Thanatos foot first, like a comet. The moment she hit him, the world returned to normal. Thanatos tumbled across the ground, cursing as he went. The succubus rushed over to Nathan and pulled him to his feet.
"Quick question, do you hear any voices in your head?"
"Does yours count?" he asked, still feeling groggy.
"Save the sweet talk for later," Mora said, but she pecked him on the cheek. "Stopped him in time, at least. I knew this guy was an ass, but if he nukes a portal, he'll fuck everything."
"What happened to the gateway?"
Nathan croaked out. He nearly toppled over. Mora propped him up by sliding her arm around him.
"Laura's taking care of it. We've got your binding stone, big boy. Don't worry about this asshole."
Around Nathan, his champions rose to their feet. Astra pressed a hand to her opals, visibly shaking.
"Astra, you're fine," he called out.
She looked up at him. "Nathan." Then she spoke in absolute gibberish. He vaguely recognized the words as something in Dark Elvish, but the structure and words sounded archaic. Nathan barely understood modern Dark Elf, let alone the ancient versions.
What? Sen said. "Ifrit understood that, but I didn't. Something about seeing the past?
Astra looked at Sen, her head snapping around fast enough to make Nathan worry about her health. A moment later, the dark elf spoke normally.
Fine. I'm fine.
Kiana rushed up to Nathan and pressed against his side, glaring at the succubus.
Now isn't the time, he growled, shaking both women off. Thanatos isn't dead.
Don't call him that, Mora groaned. I think his name is Taru or something.
It is not,
Thanatos roared as he appeared in front of them.
Yamada, the succubus suggested.
Why do you do this to me?
Thanatos summoned his blue flames again. Without Fae to handle them, Nathan drew on his binding stone power. Mora simply raised an eyebrow. A moment later, the flames fizzled out and died.
Oh, I didn't even do anything that time, Mora said.
Narime and Nerevia approached them. The fox's gems glowed, a sign that she had dispelled Thanatos' spell.
The fox is here, Thanatos said.
He looked between Faye, Narime, and then at Nathan.
This is almost a rematch, save for you.
He curled a finger at Mora.
Do not interfere in my business. I will not disrupt our master's business again. Now be gone.
Before Mora said anything more, Nathan seized the opportunity to ask something.
You seem confused by all of this. Why do you think Astra should be dead? And now the Bastion is talking to me? Last time you spent all your time distraught over all the people I slew.
Thanatos laughed.
Whatever. None of this makes sense. I've invaded thousands of worlds, even more if I include all the ones I don't remember. I am an apostle of doom. When I invade, this world is on its last legs. The legends have fallen, and everyone is desperate. But these dark elves barely know how to fight back. It's as though I'm the first messenger they've seen in their lifetimes.
You are, dumbass, Mora spat.
How would you...
He trailed as he noticed the arm she had looped around Nathan.
What? Oh, meet my new master. His cock is huge. Totally ruins me every night, Mora said, flapping a hand in the air. So, like, fuck off now. You're not needed here.
For several long seconds, Thanatos simply stared at the succubus. Nathan wondered if his mind had broken down from Mora's words. He appeared to be struggling with something.
So, you're a prize now? Thanatos said,
his voice oddly hollow.
Then I guess I'll kill all of them and claim you and your sister. It's only fitting.
Then he flexed his bone wings and blinked in front of Nathan, arm outstretched and ready to strike. Chapter 39. A wall of light appeared between Nathan and Thanatos' hand. The messenger crashed into it, and it cracked. Mora threw Nathan backward, one of her arms shrouded with darkness, and she slashed at her enemy. A barrier shimmered around Thanatos, clinging to his body. Mora's attack went right through him. Instead, it vaporized a 200-foot stretch of ground below him. The void glowed beneath him. His wings snapped out, and Thanatos shot into the air. He began to tilt to the side as one half of his wings sagged. Astra's opals glowed as she mimed pulling a rope, as if she were reeling Thanatos in like a fish. The messenger growled. He tried to break free, swinging his arm through the air several times. A scream escaped him as Astra ripped out one of the bones in his back, and gore sprayed everywhere.
He continued flying away, however.
His sword, Nathan said. He relied on it for spatial attacks.
Yeah, he's more of a magic guy, Mora said. Fucks with the raw fabric of stuff. He can create things that replicate other tricks, but his actual ascended magic is limited to actually manipulating magic itself.
How does he teleport? Nathan asked.
The robe, I think. I think he uses a tattoo or something to protect himself from mental magic.
Mora swung her arms at Thanatos, but his barrier shrugged off her attack.
Guess the robe protects him from spatial attacks, too? Fuck, I don't know. How does the dumb goat work this shit out?
To one side, Sen attempted to cast a sixth-rank spell. Thanatos spotted her and blinked in front of her. When he swung at her, she deflected the blow with her blade. It glowed white-hot from her enchantment spell. The moment her blade touched his arm, Thanatos recoiled. He blinked away, but his flicker was disrupted. Flames and crossbow bolts followed the messenger. Sen stumbled during her swing, trying to recover her footing after her target vanished. The arm